Welcome to the Women Who Code podcast.
People in an iterative way, it's not a one and done motion as we go throughout our workday. The same is true with AI.
Women Who Code Talks Tech is a segment that features experts in a specific field of technology sharing their knowledge on an in-depth and highly technical subject. These talks are designed to both introduce advanced subjects and provide insight into the work being done in these fields.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Women Who Code podcast. My name is Naomi Freeman, and I am an advisor to the board here at Women Who Code. I'm also the chair of the Strategy and Technology Committee to the board. We are here with Colette Stahlbaumer to talk about the most talked about tech disruptor of 2024, artificial intelligence. Welcome. Glad to meet you, Colette.
Thank you so much for having me, Naomi. I'm glad to be here.
Colette is the general manager, Microsoft 365 and the future of work at Microsoft. I'm super excited to have you here. I'm excited for our conversation today. Just to get started, can you tell us about how you first got interested in tech?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, growing up on a farm in Nebraska, I think I've just always been a tinkerer. And sort of had to, you know, I was the oldest of six kids, small town, you know, 4 hours from any nearest airport. And, you know, I think just, but also had a lot of, freedom of imagination, sort of for my imagination to run wild. And, I was also a total geek. I loved Star Trek, and Star Wars when it came out. And so, you know, that's taken me back, but basically, I think there's a lot of, ironically, there's a lot of machinery and equipment on a farm. And so this idea of sort of, you know, understanding from a young age, both that technology, you know, exists to help you, you know, help you do things in the world. But also just being sort of by nature, a very curious, creative, person.
Absolutely. I really appreciate you talking about that aspect of it, of technology as a tool. It's something that I talk about a lot. And I think we can get kind of caught up in the hype and the pendulum swing of technology moving from one thing to another. So I agree. It's important to remember that the tech and the machines are there to serve purposes and to serve needs.
Absolutely.
It sounds like you've had a very eclectic career and life, starting with farming and ending up in tech. I also heard, I read that you secured the title as Nebraska's debate state champion. Is that true?
State speech champion. Yes. At one point in time. Yes. Yes. you know, and for me kind of, you know, communication and a love of words that also came really early on. Again, I think being from a small town, you know, books are also like a window to the world. And so that was something that I really, you know, took a lot of my childhood time doing, and got into sort of speech and debate at a fairly young age and discovered that I was fairly good at it. And so, you know, again, I think my mom used to say that she knew from a fairly young age that I had what she called the wanderlust. And that I probably wasn't going to stay on the farm, that I was going to look for, you know, avenues to get out into the bigger, broader world. And so, you know, really finding this talent or gift that I had for doing public speaking was one of sort of the earlier things that I discovered that, you know, that looked like that might be a path for me to go from, you know, a very small town to a bigger city where there'd be more opportunity.
Was that sort of one of your first trips, like outside of your hometown, is like with debate and speech teams?
It was. Yeah. It really kind of got me, you know, exposed to, yeah. I mean, again, big city being Lincoln, Nebraska or Omaha, Nebraska, but, you know, going places right beyond my front door. And I also loved the process of, I did persuasive speaking and I loved that process of like picking a subject, researching a subject, and then, you know, taking one side, one point of view or the other. But yeah, that was kind of a start.
That's super interesting. I also come from a small town, but my thing was banned. So I wasn't using my words very early. But we did get to go to an international competition from Port Sydney, Ontario. That's where I was living, town of 300 people. Yeah.
Okay. I grew up in Oconto, Nebraska, a town of 160. Yes.
And our international competition, we drove a bus for 12 hours, like a coach bus, like a gymnast team, down to Cleveland, Ohio. And we won the international band championship that year after we visited the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in Cleveland, Ohio. It was the biggest place I'd ever been in my life.
Amazing. I don't think, isn't it funny to look back on those times? Because I don't think we realize at all at those moments that those are defining moments, right? That those are things in our life that are happening to us that are actually opening up avenues and windows and, our ability to see greater possibilities for ourselves.
Absolutely. And it's small steps at a time. So a lot of your work has been in marketing and communications for tech companies, but how do you go from, you had that first experience where you're getting out and you're doing these championships and then you just woke up and you were a marketing and tech professional? Can you just walk me through what the timeline kind of looks like?
Yeah. I have a journalism degree and a marketing and English advertising major and marketing and English and sociology minors. And so kind of the blending of those things, as I said, I think knowing from a very young age that I am a words person, I still identify myself as a words person to this day. And so after college, again, I did have this desire to really go, move from Nebraska to a larger city, made my way to Chicago, actually, where I worked for advertising agencies. I worked at J. Walter Thompson. I worked at DDB Needham. And that gave me such a good grounding and appreciation for the craft, what it means to sort of really understand market research and understand how to build brands. And then, kind of skip ahead and made my way to the Pacific Northwest, where I also started, did some things startups where, and then interestingly in the Pacific Northwest at that time, technology was sort of happening. And so started to make my way from an advertising agency career into technology and, did a number of different things, but landed at Microsoft.
You also owned your own business, which is really interesting to think about. Have you been at Microsoft steadily since you arrived at Microsoft, or did you kind of come in and out?
Yeah, I've been at Microsoft steadily now for more than 20 years. And, I sort of had this small side hustle as a boutique owner before that was a popular thing to do at all. I was doing it on the nights and weekends. An opportunity was presented to me to explore that. And I had a partner who was really more the person who was on the floor all day, if you will. But yeah, it was called Sway and Cake. And it's still around in Seattle, actually, as a boutique. I think that what drives me a lot of times is, just curiosity. I just have this burning desire to I feel like if I don't say yes to this opportunity, I'm always going to wonder, would I love being a boutique owner? And so, I tried it. I kind of got that out of my system. And I think what's so amazing today for young people too, is there isn't a linear career path, right? You can have all these different experiences. You can have a, sort of a career portfolio or take that approach to it even. Maybe I was a pioneer there before I knew it. While at Microsoft, I started in the advertising team, having come from the agency side, and worked on Microsoft advertising campaigns. And then from there, I moved into marketing. You can kind of chart my career at Microsoft, in fact, by sort of the technology inflection points. I worked on our first what we called interoperability or openness campaign. There's a moment where we did a slide that if you go back in the archives, you can find that's Microsoft Hearts Linux. And at the time, that was very, we hadn't sort of come out and said that before. I worked on the first ever cloud campaign, Microsoft being all in on the cloud at the frontier of when the company really shifted our strategy to be a cloud company and a platform company on that. And then, I would say that kind of brings me to what I would call sort of one of my biggest career departures or left turns, if you will, which is when I became a speechwriter in the CEO's office.
I think that's a really interesting journey. Just focusing on the first part in terms of communications, I'm not sure that's something we always get to hear about when we're thinking about the tech industry. So for you, what do you think the role of communication professionals is in the industry? And you've talked about a few different angles. We've talked a bit about agency and different advertising and slides, right up into speech writing, right? So
right. I mean, I think the role of communications is more important than ever. You know, I think we are in a very, you know, we're in a very media saturated world, right? And in a very technology saturated world. And so being able to communicate clearly, to land your message, to be able to talk about, you know, what it is, what amazing thing it is that your product does, or, you know, personally, what your gifts are. You know, I think those things, being able to distill something down to its essence is a really important skill and craft. And interestingly, I think it does not at all get less important in this age of AI. I think it's more important than ever.
I completely agree. And I think we heard about that a little bit in the big startup boom in terms of unique value proposition, and also thinking about that in terms of brand and self. And I know that could feel a little fluffy in the way that some folks kind of were approaching it, but I agree that at the end of the day, we need to get down to that nut of what is a differentiator and how that makes great brands.
Yeah. How's it going to help people, right? Like, if you can't articulate that, it all kind of comes back to that.
Absolutely. Today you're leading the future work team at Microsoft. And your team drove the launch of Microsoft 360 Copilot, which is all about AI solutions for productivity software. So you're talking a little bit now about AI and how we make those unique connections now. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, what your work means in practical terms, as well as this point that we're at with AI?
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, we're so excited about Microsoft Copilot, and in particular, Copilot for Microsoft 365, and what it can do for people at work. You know, this amazing tech inflection point that we all find ourselves at, where, you know, using natural language with these large language models, you can do amazing things. You know, I can turn to Copilot and say, you know, tell my team how we updated the product strategy in such and such a meeting this morning. Or I can start my day by saying, tell me what's hot in my inbox today. You know, or what emails has my boss sent me in the last 24 hours? And so, yeah, it's just this whole new way of thinking about both how we work and how we interact with technology.
Absolutely. And those large language models are really making use of deep learning algorithms that we've been working on over the past X period of time, right?
That's right.
That's what's able to recognize and summarize and do these other tasks that you're kind of describing in terms of where are my emails, what's my boss need, all of that.
That's right. And then, you know, we take, without getting too technical, right, we take that large language model, you know, with our partners at OpenAI, that they pioneered, and we add proprietary things to it to enable it to do really amazing things in the context of your work data. So that's why, you know, when Microsoft 365 Copilot knows your documents at work, knows your content, knows your emails, knows your calendar, knows who you work with. So it knows that if I'm, talking about, you know, send this email to Naomi, it knows which Naomi I mean. So that's pretty powerful stuff in terms of being able to really free up time. We know that. You know, our heaviest users at Microsoft get, or our heaviest Microsoft 365 users get 250 emails a day. They get 150 chats. We know that, you know, Teams meetings are up 3x globally since early 2020. And we kind of talk about all of that as digital debt. We sort of coined that phrase. You know, I think the volume and the pace of work and how much it's gone up for people is very real. And we see in our data that people really feel that. And so, you know, I think what I'm excited about is for AI to help with all that.
Absolutely. And I think there's really productive, efficient, effective ways that product can move forward with AI. But for myself, sometimes I'm like, remember how we used to have social media with like leaderboards of our friends and stuff?
Yes.
So, you know, what if we were kind of revealing some of like who the most spent time was with or who the leaderboard was with like unopened emails? Like for me, I feel like that would be a fun prototype project just to play with the office for a day. I think that could be fun.
I love that idea, Naomi. Yeah. Like how do we make it? It's so funny. I was just talking with a customer about this yesterday, actually. How do we make it a badge of honor to, you know, to talk about how much time you're regaining from these tools in some ways? You know, because I think as with any technology inflection point in any big tech shift, there's the tech and then there's also culture. And, you know, I've seen time and time again throughout my career, how, in terms of the adoption curve and what that looks like for people, especially inside organizations, it really takes both. You can give people the tools, but you also have to create the culture that makes it, you know, safe and encouraged and, you know, like we were talking about, something that you want to, that you want people to do and to make that habit change and shift and work in a new way.
For sure. But thinking about some of those efficiencies and like some of the time that we save, having worked in a larger organization myself, I do agree with what you were talking about earlier with how context, like which Naomi, which document, which project team. And if AI is able to pick up those pieces, I do believe there's a huge time cost savings there to be had, especially when you're working across these different pieces of a portfolio. So now you're leading the future of work team at Microsoft. Can you tell us a bit about that?
So I'm privileged to lead our work on the future of work. And, you know, I think it's a big responsibility, actually, an opportunity to be working on that. That sort of arose as my next role after the office of the CEO. And interestingly, I think, you know, we had all this rich research on how work was changing, but we hadn't necessarily brought it to the fore for people to really understand deeply what those trends were. And, you know, out of that sort of came, we birthed, you know, in deep partnership with my PR partners at Microsoft, the Work Trend Index and Work Lab. And so, you know, I think there was a really interesting shift there in how Microsoft, you know, we recognized. So what's interesting is I took this role and about to go, you know, take on a new charter to talk about and work on and be sort of research and data driven to the future of work and help customers. And about 3 weeks later, after I accepted the position, the pandemic happened. And so, you know, we kind of had this idea, and this was something I was working in Satya's office at the time and something he and I had talked about, and as well with the marketing leader, my current boss now. And we sort of, the three of us, you know, kind of came to this notion around this charter around future of work. And then, you know, the world shifts. And so a really interesting timing, right? Of like, okay, I think there's a need here. We see this need. You know, I'm excited to go work on this challenge and opportunity. And then since then, you know, really it's been obviously a wild ride on, you know, kind of helping customers and helping people navigate through the pandemic on, you know, what are the changing work trends? What are the patterns? How is it all changing? And, you know, really helping customers navigate that whole change and helping people navigate that change. And so now we've turned our research, engine and focus and all the brilliant scientists and scientific minds that we have at Microsoft to studying how AI will change work yet again. And so it's an amazing, you know, I'm so, I feel so lucky and blessed to actually be leading this type of really important work at Microsoft and for people.
I think that's such a cool job. And I'm so excited that somebody's out there thinking about it, because I think about it a lot. Compared to where I started in my home, I live abroad. And so there've been all these different communication pieces where sometimes I'm in one time zone, sometimes mm-hmm. I'm in another. working with different cultures. And it's interesting how technology comes in and helps with that and helps facilitate it, and how sometimes technology can feel like a little bit of something that we have to work more with to get it to get where we need to go.
Right.
So I think a lot.
Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, I was just saying, no, we set this really ambitious goal back in early 2020 to be the company that understands how work is changing better and more than anyone else, to study that more deeply and more intensely. And, you know, now we've, as I said, we're kind of applying that same, you know, that same thought process to AI, because it's going to change work a lot. And so how do we help people through this time of, you know, this next technology inflection point?
That's a really big goal. That's a huge thing for your team to be taking on.
It is. It's exciting.
Super exciting. Can you share your perspective on the development of AI generally over the years, and how it has already impacted businesses and jobs and the way that folks are working?
Yeah. I mean, I think there's just, you know, I think there's so much potential. You know, even just take an industry like healthcare. You know, we're seeing, again, some of the more interesting things that are emerging are, you know, what if you're a doctor who doesn't have to write up the patient notes anymore, right? And you can use AI to capture those and capture them in a really meaningful way, in an accurate way. And that, you know, think about the time that frees for that doctor to be more focused on their patients and on patient care. And then take it another step further. You know, what if AI can then help when that doctor's following up with that patient to be more empathetic and human in their tone of whatever communication they're sending back? Because maybe that's not their specific talent or skill set as a brilliant doctor, but AI can help with that, right? So in this really interesting way, AI can help make us all more human.
Absolutely. And I think it's interesting to think about that in the context of a doctor, but then I'm thinking about, you know, say a very stereotypical boss that I might have worked with in the past, and suddenly they're having empathetic communication. I'm just trying to understand, you know, what that kind of looks like in the future of work.
Exactly. So, yeah, you know, so you can draft it. You could, let's say you have a fairly sensitive thing to communicate, right? You need to give some feedback to someone, okay? And maybe you don't know quite how to give that feedback. You can tell Microsoft 365 Copilot, you can put it a prompt that says, hey, I need to give this feedback to this person. I need some help. It's interesting because the more you work with it, like you would kind of a direct report or a chief of staff or a colleague or someone on your team, the more context you give it, the better your result you're going to get back. And so you would say something like, I need help writing this email. I need to give this person some feedback. I need to tell them that they do these three things great, but they need to work on these three other areas. And you can be very specific and detailed in what you're asking it to do. And I want to land this in a way that, you know, that John can hear. And, you know, and so Copilot will give you a draft of that. And it'll give you a start, right? It's something that we talk about this, you know, and so it'll give you a start at what that might look like. And then you can say, well, that's a really great, helpful start. Now, can you make it sound like me? Or can you make it sound more empathetic? Or can you, you know, dial up this message that I want to land a little bit more forcefully? And so, you know, it's really, what I think is so fascinating about this is when you really zoom out, like all work is iterative, right? Whether none of us works entirely in a vacuum. And I know for myself, that's certainly true on how I come up with good ideas. Like I definitely, you know, I love having a thought partner, multiple thought partners when I'm doing anything like that. Now I have AI as a thought partner to add to the mix. But really it's this concept of just like you work with people in an iterative way. It's not a one and done motion as we go throughout our workday. The same is true with AI. The more people understand that you use it in this iterative way, not like a search engine, that's when like this really magical unlock starts to happen.
That's really interesting to think about the different ways that we'll be able to think about using it. And I think we see some of that coming up right now. If you see job postings online, we're starting to see prompt engineering coming up, mm-hmm. which sounds a lot like what you're talking about in terms of, I'm going to take on a persona as a person who's talking to this bot and yep. want it to do Model. Something as AI.
Copilot, yep.
And trying to get it to sound a certain way or to know how to be in a context. So I think that's really interesting that we're already starting to see the rise of these new kinds of roles. For yourself moving forward, what do you think the role of the communications professionals in tech will look like, kind of working alongside AI? Do you think it's mostly a partnership, or do you think there's new ways that communication professionals can lead or create interventions, or what else they should be doing with their time when AI starts to partner?
Yeah, I think this is, I touched on this a little bit, but I'll go back to it. I mean, first of all, I think this idea of, you know, thinking like a manager, right? So, with Copilot, it's sort of like everyone gets a new assistant or a direct report, but that is, you know, everyone gets an always available, infinitely patient, highly capable assistant. And who doesn't want that? And so, but that requires kind of these new skills around delegation, exercising good judgment, and the ability to apply subject matter expertise. I think those are some essential skills for the machine age or the age of AI. And I'll give you an example of kind of how that come, you know, one example to relate to. On my team, we're using it a lot to do, as we do, marketing and branding and messaging. We name a lot of things, right? And so we might need some help from Copilot on, hey, generate, 20 names for me, right? That could be the name of this feature, this product, this capability. Copilot's going to give you a really good list, list back to work with and really fast in seconds. But then it still takes your judgment as the communicator and as the communications expert to evaluate that content, right? And so that's where the human agency part comes in. That's more important than ever. You're going to need to be able to look at that list and separate the wheat from the chaff. And so, which are the ones that you would immediately eliminate from the list? And why is this one interesting? And then how do you build on the idea from there? And so I do think this idea that, communications expertise will always be highly valued. I really believe in that. And I think, again, with being able to craft messages that will break through. So that's why I think that judgment skill is so interesting, because you're going to have the ability to get content, right? Like, we're going to be in a world where getting that good first draft is going to be really easy, but getting from good to great, I think, is where people come in. That's where humans come in and humans' unique ability comes in, and being able to evaluate and use judgment to decide what to do with the content that you get.
Yeah, and I think that's an interesting point to add to the conversation that's coming up on the education side of things. I previously worked as a CTO in ed tech, where teachers needed to come online during the pandemic. Mm. And when they do this motion, there's this jump between, as a person who delivers words in person that come from textbooks, and I add myself to I'm online, I can deliver anywhere, anytime, should I be live? Now, it might not always look that explicit in the conversation, but there's a jump then to my delivery to content. And then when you start to say content in the context of AI, where's the line between I have developed a content and I have developed educational materials?
Right.
And obviously that's not the focus of our conversation here today, but I do think one of the reasons that we're having that kind of conversation in education is because folks want to know where that line is. And I think it's great that you've brought up that point of judgment and where subject matter experts and domain experts fit into that. And I think those lessons can be applied across a lot of different industries, with a lot of different questions that are starting to come up about this murky line of, like, who owns this?
Right.
Who's accountable for this? And what does it mean when we send that on? So in tech, communicating the information is important. As we move into AI beyond the main tech industry, it's interesting to see how those conversations are beginning to evolve and try and understand where that judgment line is, that we must have people involved.
I completely agree. I think those are going to be really interesting and important conversations moving forward. And, you know, and I think that's why the, you know, having human agency at the center, which is how we've designed Copilot, is super important.
In terms of tech and innovations for other things that are coming in the future, what else do you think that people should be paying attention to on the horizon? Like, in your opinion, what's the next big thing?
Oh my gosh.
I think that's huge when we already have Copilot on the table.
There's so much. I think what I'm most excited about is, I think we're in the next big thing. I think AI is going to be the next big thing for a while. And I think we're just so in the early innings. You know, we're just at the start of this transformation. And, you know, I'm seeing so many glimmers and glimpses of, you know, of interesting things about where this could go. But I think we are, you know, I think we're just at the start.
And I think that that calls back to your earlier point that most work is iterative. And in terms of AI, we've seen a huge disruption. We've seen a huge shift built on years of algorithms learning. And once you get that big hit, people are like, okay, it's good, right?
Right.
But I think it's important to remember it's probably iterative from here for some period of time.
I think that's right. And I think, you know, what we saw in the data, we haven't talked about that yet, but, you know, I think what's really interesting in our data that, you know, that jumps out at us is people love Copilot. Like it's fun. It's fun to use this technology. And so who kind of doesn't want more sort of joy and fun in their workday? In addition to sort of lightening the load on mundane tasks, you know, there's a sense of surprise and delight about what Copilot and what these tools can do, where you're like, wow, I didn't know it could do that. And that's a pretty fun time to be working in technology.
For you, what's the most like, I guess you're behind the scenes a bit, but for you, what was the most fun or most surprising thing that Copilot did when you showed up one morning and you were like, oh, good morning, how are you?
Good morning. Yeah. I mean, I think it's this ability to, you know, actually I'll tell you one, in meetings, like, you know, I think some of the, when we were using it really early on, before we'd even announced and released the product, like seeing what it could do in meetings where it could capture an entire meeting discussion and provide a summary and really get really right, like who said what, what the key points of agreement and dissension were, the tone and sentiment of the meeting, you know, being able to say that it was a lively, you know, a lively discussion, those kinds of things. I mean, there are some real, you know, surprise and delight moments early on when you realize that there's a tool that can do this now. And I think for meetings in particular, you know, what we're already hearing and from customers and seeing in the data is it's allowing people to be more present in the conversation, because they're not as, you know, they're not focused on taking notes. And they know that if they miss something in the last 5 minutes, they can just ask Copilot like what they missed. So that's magical.
It's definitely a magical moment. I feel like we've struggled a lot to regain presence in a lot of these meetings, hybrid, in person. It can just be challenging with the distractions we have with our different devices and the different pieces of information that come in and out of meetings that didn't used to do that. And I think presence really is such a cornerstone of effective and empathetic communication that is necessary to building things forward.
Boy, do I agree with that. Yeah, I really agree with that. I'm on the presence bandwagon. Like, yeah, how do we all be more present and connect, right? That connection, that having that human connection. And that's another good example of this, you know, this sort of early insight, which is that I think that AI can help make us more human.
Just changing kind of from this part of the conversation into thinking about some of the other work you did at Microsoft, just before we head off. In your previous role, you worked side by side with the Microsoft CEO, Satya Nadella, to completely change the culture at the company during a pivotal time. Can you tell us a little bit about that, about what that pivotal time is? Does it align up with one of these technology inflections? And thinking about, you know, some of these human points that we're talking about here with with being present and having effective communication, you know, how can we sort of apply some of these lessons to create healthier, more productive work environments?
Yeah, I'd love to talk about that. I mean, again, we kind of talked about how you can, you know, sort of chart my career by the tech at Microsoft, by the tech inflection points. I think, you know, I joined Satya's office and team in 2014 when he became CEO. And, you know, and as I said, I think I touched on this or mentioned this, but it was a real left turn in my career. I was actually, you know, asked if I would consider, you know, doing this and being a speechwriter. And I didn't know anything about being a speechwriter. It was actually the role before I joined his office that I took that really scary left turn that prepared me to do the role in his office. But I think the point there that I would share with listeners is, you know, do the things that scare you, right? Take those big gambles. You know, I think those are, if I look back on my career, those are the opportunities that, you know, that can be really career defining. And so, you know, I was really fortunate to have the opportunity to work in the office of the CEO when we were going through this massive culture transformation at Microsoft and work on that and help with that. And it really lined up with my personal values of what I'm passionate about in terms of this intersection of technology and culture and people and how can we all be more human and have a culture that is about being more human. And so, you know, I think that was a really amazing experience to be a part of and really important, meaningful work to me. And so I think, you know, embracing ambiguity, saying yes to opportunities that scare you, you know, those are definitely, you know, things to use as guiding light posts in your career.
Yeah. That's a good thing to think about. And that's kind of my final question for you, really, for the Women Who Code community. If you just summarize that, what's your one pro tip for women looking to follow in your footsteps and become leaders in tech?
Well, maybe I'll give you a couple of thoughts. I mean, you know, one pro tip, I think one thing is like, don't be afraid to bring usefully wrong ideas to the table. You know, I think that's a phrase I use a lot at Microsoft and with my team. And I think there's something sort of disarming about it. When you actually say to someone, hey, I have a usefully wrong idea, right? You already, right out of the gate, you kind of tell them, it gives them the signal. It puts them on notice that like, what I'm about to say might not be entirely right, but listen carefully, right? Because there might be some real gems in here. And so I think that is something, you know, that's something that I've used, you know, certainly throughout my career. You're not downplaying or deprecating yourself or your contributions. You're just basically creating sort of a way for you to get your idea on the table, right? And put it out there. And, you know, don't let perfectionism silence you. Be brave. And be willing to put your ideas out there. One of the things I definitely appreciated and learned from working with Satya Nadella in the office of the CEO is that a great idea can come from anywhere. You know, he believes deeply in that, and I love that. And I saw that and have seen that so much in action during my time at Microsoft. It's not about level or education or where you come from or any of that. It's really about having a great idea. And then I would say, you know, how you do the work and move that idea forward is as important as what you do. You know, it really is about this idea of just treating each other with kindness and grace. And giving grace. I think that's kind of, you know, there's so much hard stuff in the world. And I think everyone at any moment in time is going through something. And so how do we all show up in a way that, you know, with empathy and kindness for our fellow humans?
I think that's a really important thought to take away from our chat today. And bringing it back to some of those workplace parts when you're starting in your career and moving up, I think it can be challenging when you're focused on one part of the work and you just know it's got to get across this way. But leaders are working between so many different pieces. I think your advice is really valuable for folks who are trying to, like, you know, flip that perspective and find some empathy for leaders and how that information comes across. I think it's important with how you started this part of the conversation to think about, well, at least some parts of this might be great. And here I respect that you got a lot of context that I might not have. It's not to deprecate right. or put myself down, but here's all the little gems I got and see what you can do with it. Just make some magic.
Right. That's right. We can all make magic together and AI can help.
I think both parts of those, that advice is super helpful. Thank you so much for your time today. I have really enjoyed our conversation and I definitely have some good insights myself to take away. I hope you have a great day.
Thank you so much, Naomi. I've loved being here and having the conversation too. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to the Women Who Code podcast. To find out more about our mission and the work we do across the tech industry, visit our website at www.womenwhocode.com. You can also follow us on all socials at Women Who Code. Be sure to check out our YouTube channel, Women Who Code, with hundreds of hours of free educational videos. Thanks again for listening, and remember to subscribe, rate, and comment.